everyone, welcome to another episode of Live Chat with Viv and Bill. Hi, Vivalyn. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Vilma?
I am doing well. You don't sound very convincing. How has your week been?
It's been good. You know, just trying to deal with every day with having kids and school and work. You know, the same things that we all are dealing with right now. Our lives have shifted to being home and homeschooling kids and, you know, doing work at the same time. So it's just the same thing where I'm sure millions of Americans is dealing with the same thing right now. But right. It's all good.
Yep, that's the joy, some of the joys of motherhood. But yes, we have a great show for today. What are we talking about?
We're talking about the health of America, especially dealing with COVID-19. You know, the effects that it may have on America today. You know, I was talking to one of my cousins and she was telling me that there are going to be more dramatic crisis when it comes in towards the healthcare in America when it comes to the mental health aspect. So that's why we feel that, you know, it's important for us to get someone in here that is an expert in that field to talk about the mental aspect of the effect of COVID-19.
That's wonderful. And we could probably get some help ourselves. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure we'll learn something.
Okay. Do you want me to introduce our guest?
Sure. I think it would be a very much of an honor for you to introduce the guest.
All right. To my listening audience, I am so ecstatic and I'm so proud to introduce our guest for this evening, Dr. Renee Davis. And we have this similar last name, if you notice why. She is actually my daughter, and she's a psychologist, and she works out of Maryland, and she's going to share some of her expertise with us here this evening, and I am honored and looking forward to talking with her.
Dr. Davis, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you both for having me. I won't assume it was just because of the relationship.
No, we know you're good at what you do. So definitely wanted you on the show to let us know and be informed of what's really going on.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, my name is Renee Davis. I have a PhD in clinical psychology. But to kind of back up a little bit, I was raised by one of the lovely co-hosts, my father in Delaware. I went to school in Washington, D.C. at Howard University, did my undergrad and graduate school there. And I currently reside in Maryland, where I have the pleasure of working with many children, teens, and young adults with regards to therapy, mental health.
Wonderful.
That's good. So in light of what we talked about earlier, and we were saying, I know we're going to jump right into this because it's a lot to cover today. And I know you have a lot to say in regards to what's going on dealing with COVID-19. I don't know if you listened to our taping that we did last week. We had three great nurses on talking about their experience. And I'm not sure if you yourself had encountered any clients or had to deal with clients that, you know, have issues with COVID-19. So if you want to address that topic, if you had clients dealing with COVID-19.
Right. So not necessarily in the case of actually dealing with diagnoses, but definitely had the opportunity to work with some families where a parent within the household was working in the hospital setting, worked with families who are maybe not necessarily dealing with the medical aspect, but just dealing with the other systemic impact that this pandemic has had. So with regard to the economy, with regard to homeschooling, with regard to just a heightened stress, anxiety, and fear. So that's kind of been my experience, and also just kind of adjusting. So before all of this started, I was working in office, and clearly since all of this has shifted everything, I am now doing telehealth, which has been a new experience for many. So even the adjustment in that aspect of providing support in a meaningful way through a screen has been an interesting experience.
Good, good.
Wow. I can imagine.
Yeah. So do you find, or what's your take on, you know, the psychological impact that COVID-19, as Vivelyn said, is having on people in different aspects? Just the fact that, you know, we are so restricted in our movement and there are so many things happening. Do you see that psychologically there's going to be a lot of repercussions?
Definitely. I think there are so many ways to kind of look at it. So anytime we deal with such a significant shift in our lives, it doesn't necessarily have to be a pandemic, but anything that causes what we once knew as normal to change, we have a reaction to it. And so even if you have not necessarily been immediately impacted by what has gone on, in a sense, it has been traumatic for everyone. And as a result, when we deal with trauma, there is an impact on our emotional functioning. And so you do see the anxiety, you see the fear, you see sense of hopelessness, especially for those who haven't had opportunities to kind of leave the home. You know, you see just fears about what will happen in the future. What will this look like in a couple? Will this end? And when there is such a outstanding level of uncertainty, we all can kind of struggle to adjust to that. And so from that aspect, but I also will be honest in saying that there's another aspect of underlying mental health concerns that people have carried with them for so long. And because they were going to work and going to meetings and going to the kids' soccer games and rushing from here to there, they didn't necessarily have the opportunity to feel the full impact. Mm. But now that things, to an extent, have slowed down, all of a sudden, maybe some of the underlying challenges that they've experienced all along with regards to emotional functioning are coming to a head. And now this current scenario that we're living in has just shined a light on something that has already been there all along.
Wow. So when a person see this shift happening and they're seeing that, oh no, I don't have work, I don't have running the kids here and there to cover coat this, and they realize that there must be something wrong with me. What do you say to a person like that, that they found out, like, my world is turned upside down of the things that I use to cover this situation? You know what I mean? Not knowing that they have this issue. What would you say to an individual like that? Like, what's the sign? What do they see to say that something is really wrong?
Right. Yeah. So I definitely think it's important to kind of distinguish between levels of severity. So we're all, to an extent, dealing with anxiety on some level, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's at the level of concern that would be considered under like a diagnosis. Or we're all feeling maybe some despair and days where we feel having experienced low mood, or, you know, days of depressed mood and all of that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's absolutely going to fall under a disorder. So what I would first say is, whatever you're feeling in the moment, the important thing is to kind of just validate that, to validate the feelings of fear, to validate the feelings of hopelessness and despair, and to actually acknowledge it. That's kind of like the first step, because sometimes we just do such a good job of pretending as though it's not there. So instead, just be able to acknowledge and say, you know what, this is what I'm feeling, and it's real. And then from there, kind of just noticing how it's impacting other areas of life. So what I often encourage others to do is, you know, when something has become problematic, when you think about time-wise, how long have I been dealing with this? Has it just been, you know, a week or two or a day or two, or has it been like a month or two and I still feel like I'm in a slump? What other areas of my life are impacted? Has it been difficult for me to stay connected socially with friends and with church members or with colleagues or family members? Has it been difficult for me to maintain my physical health? Mm-hmm. Maybe before I was, you know, physically active or I was eating well, and now, you know, I've noticed that that's gone downhill. Has it been difficult for me with regards to sleep and sleep functioning, and, you know, how is that impacted? So looking at all the other areas of my life, and if I've noticed that I'm struggling and I'm feeling a challenge in multiple areas of my life to the point where I don't feel like I have what it takes to push past it, mm-hmm. then that's when we would say, you know, maybe it's time to kind of look for some additional help.
Okay. That's a lot there to digest, and, you know, and thank you for bringing out certain aspects that we were not even thinking about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Vivelyn, and one of the things that I often think about that I'm going to ask our guest here, we have an acute impact and crisis, but then as the years go back, how do you think that this moment in time will be still affecting people in, say, 2 years from now, 3 years from now?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it's interesting because in some ways, some people aren't necessarily going to feel the full effect of trauma until maybe a couple months from now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you may experience grief or the loss of a loved one. And maybe in the moment when it's all happening, everything seems fine. But then 6 months down the road, it all of a sudden hits you. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you think about those who have experienced various tragedies and traumas that have relayed into a diagnosis of PTSD. Well, that's something that can't even be diagnosed until you've had like a month long of symptoms. So it's not necessarily an immediate thing that we see. And so when we think about what's going to happen down the line, it's kind of hard to predict. It's hard to know, you know, what it will look like. But for some, you know, it may be the case where it's more longstanding. And I think that's why it's so important to have conversations like these, to make sure that it stays on the table, to make sure that we stay aware of it, and to make sure that we're putting things in place so that even if the road gets harder down the line, I kind of know what the signs are and I know what my resources are.
Yeah. Speaking about what you just said too, I thought about the nurses or the doctors that's dealing with so many clients that's going through COVID-19, and they didn't really have a chance to digest or, you know, deal with the situation. That's really going to, according to what you just said, it seemed like later on we will maybe have a problem with people who have to, you know, digest with the stress and how many deaths they have seen and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. And I know, you know, I don't know how far reaching it is, but I know efforts have been made specifically to kind of address that. So having support groups for people that have been on the front line so that even in a small way, they can begin to validate what they're experiencing, even if they can't necessarily process it to the full extent. But yeah.
So what would you say to some, I know there are certain sectors of the society, for example, African-American, and I may be speaking out of terms, you can correct me. This is one time when you can correct me, being the expert in the field, or people who are religious, like Christians, who will say, I don't need to go see a psychologist. What would you say to us, people who think that way, that I'll just ride it through? No, I don't need to tell people my inner thoughts or my business. I need to keep this at home. What would you suggest? Is that a good way to deal with it?
You know, I think one of the efforts that has been going on for the past couple of years now is just this idea of breaking the stigma. And because there's such a large stigma associated with going to therapy for certain demographics, maybe for some that are associated with the evangelical Christian community, people of African descent to an extent. And part of that is just because it's hard to be able to trust people in a space where you have to be so vulnerable. So one of the ways that I explain it is that the therapy room is a place that requires significant vulnerability. And if I can't trust the person that I'm talking to, then I'm not going to want to share. And so I think there's an understanding that there are those fears and there's a preference to kind of ride it out on my own. And it takes a lot of courage to take that step and to go for a session when it's needed. And so my encouragement would be to just try it out one time and see what happens. A lot of times we are fearful of what we don't know. And if we don't necessarily give it a chance or give it a try, we'll never know the benefits that can truly come from it. And those in the field are well aware of the fact that it's so important to build that trust and to build that rapport and to have that genuine relationship and to have the cultural competence. And so I think that there's enough awareness to say when somebody comes in and they're hesitant, I know what support is needed.
Wonderful. That's excellent. Thank you. Thank you.
When a person come in, what do they expect when they come to a psychologist's office? What is to be expected?
Right. So what the other person is expecting as they come in, they can expect many different things. Popular culture has had a way of painting certain pictures of what it looks like, you know, to come see a psychologist or to come to see a licensed therapist. Sometimes you see those cartoons or those movies where somebody's sitting on the couch and they got their feet up and the psychologist is in a leather chair and just listening to their problems. And it's not necessarily that at all. And
that's not what to do.
Spelling that. That would be nice, right? You can go in and just spend an hour on a couch if you want to. I'm sure some people do that. But, you know, when you have that first meeting, what it generally looks like, it's an intake session. And so it's just all about getting an opportunity to get some background information. Lots of questions are asked about current functioning. And there's different areas that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think about that are on our minds to kind of get an understanding of what your mental status is, what the problem areas are, what your strengths are. It's not necessarily something that's solely focused on the weaknesses, but also kind of an understanding of your strengths, your family background, your educational background, social functioning, so many different areas. And it's just a dialogue. And it's an opportunity for you to also interview your therapist. So it's not necessarily I have to go and I have to follow everything that they say, but you get to go in and say, do I like this person? Do I like the way that they're talking with me? Do I like the rapport that we're building? Am I comfortable? Do I feel like I can get to a point, even if I'm not ready to share everything, do I feel like I can get to that point, you know, in a couple sessions from now? And so, I think it's not as scary as people may think.
Well, that's good to know. Right, Velma? That's good to know.
Yeah, I'm signing up. Okay. So I have a question. I am, well, more or less a statement, and you can correct me. There seem to be more and more African-American or non-white people being psychologists. So I think that that's an advantage where Blacks or African Americans can see people who look like them, that will probably encourage them more to go. Do you see that? Do you notice that there are more and more minority going into the field of psychology and becoming a psychologist?
Yeah, I do think that the overall trend is changing. I will say, so let me just clarify, because I know we've used therapists and psychologists, and there are different roles, right? So there's a licensed clinical psychologist, and that's a person who has gotten either a PsyD or a PhD degree, which is the highest degree that you can get in that area. And they have the license to provide different diagnoses, and they're more so kind of like scientific and research-based. We're dependent on a lot of like evidence-based theoretical orientations. And then you have those who are licensed clinical therapists, mental health therapists, licensed clinical social workers, and they typically are master's level, but they also provide amazing services. They can have their own practices and provide diagnoses mm-hmm. as well. And then a lot of times people get confused. They're also the group of psychiatrists. Now, psychiatrists, those are the ones that provide medication. They're actual medical mm-hmm. doctors. Okay. So in addition to understanding all of the different psychiatric diagnoses that there are, they can actually provide the psychotropic help with regard to whatever concerns the patient brings in. So there are different categories and different groups, depending on what you're kind of looking for. So that being said, I think in the overall field, the mental health field, is it becoming more diverse? Certainly. Is it fabulous? Probably not. but I do think, you know, that it helps for some to mm-hmm. be able to go into a room where they see somebody that looks like them.
Yeah.
I definitely think it helps. Yeah. And not even with, sorry, I was just going to say not even with regards to people of African descent, but I know that there are also Christians that feel comfortable when they know that the person that they're seeing is a Christian as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to make a side comment in reference to what you said, because I was on a plane flying to, I don't remember where I was flying to, and I met a psychologist that she was dealing with the family, and she was of an Indian descent. And she was saying to me that, you know, what do you do, blah, blah, blah. And I told her that I'm a life coach. And she's like, oh, that's great. You should probably further your career in being a psychologist also, because we need people, exactly what you were saying. She was saying that people of color, whether you're Indian, whether you're a Latino descent or whatever, looking for people like their own, looking at someone able to relate to them, someone who can understand where they're coming from in that particular field. So yeah, you know, she was just encouraging me to go further, which I do love life coaching, thank you, so, you know, to go further into that, because of the fact that people, she said that's a really dying need for people of color in that field. So yeah,
mm-hmm. great. That being said, I will say also, as important as it is for some people, and it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody that doesn't look like you can't provide the care and support that you need. So I definitely want to put that out there as well.
Exactly. Yeah, true. Now, do you have any other questions for her in this, or can I want to touch on something else?
I was about to touch on something else myself. I think basically in, you said about, you know, the ones that can able to give, I don't want to mess it up, so I'm just going to say the ones that can able to give drugs, or, you know, their title is
psychiatrist.
And the ones mm-hmm. that's dealing with just your mental issues of saying that you have certain stress and you want to, de-stress. You have, you know, certain things that you're dealing with that you just need a little help with, that to channel through that portion of your life that you're dealing with right now. And that will be a psychologist, right? Am I right in what you're defining? The
right.
Three
as far as it, yes. So the difference okay. between a psychologist and a psychiatrist. Yes.
Okay. So I just want to make sure our listeners understand what the difference are, to break it down, that they understand that this one can give a medication. This one is one that more can help you through stress and different things like that. So I just want to break that down a little bit more.
And the psychologist is licensed to make diagnoses?
Yes.
Okay.
And a licensed clinical social worker and a licensed mental health therapist can also provide diagnoses.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I normally don't really think of certain things. Like I said, a cousin of mine brought this to my attention, and she was just saying that there's going to be more people dealing with mental health than the ones that really died of COVID-19. I thought that was just a big statement that she made. And in talking to a couple of other people that I know in this field, they was like, yeah, it's really going to be a big thing when you think about, you know, the healthcare workers, what they had to deal with, what they see on a daily basis. people who are in a household that, you know, they're normally out and about doing things and how mentally that's going to affect them. And kids who can't even understand why I can't go to school, you know, and why can't I see my teacher, or why can't I play with my friends, or, you know, different things that people have to deal with, that this is something out of the norm, you know, this going to be, we call that this is not the norm, but this is kind of like our norm now in America. So we just really want to talk about that a little bit today. And I know we want to shift the segment a little bit to currently what's happening right now. So Vilma, you can go ahead with your question.
Yeah. What I wanted to know as well, you know, and I don't know if you did you ask a question? Or you just made a statement?
No, okay. I just summarized basically what's going on. And I know we want to shift it a little bit to currently what's going on in society today. So so then I said, being that you had a question earlier, I just wanted to make sure you got that question.
What I was, thank you so much, Vivian. What I was going to ask is, do you see an increase in, you know, domestic violence, child abuse, divorce, things like that, are what they're saying on the news? Is it correct?
Yeah. So I can't necessarily speak to specific numbers and statistics, and I don't know when, you know, we'll get all of that. And I often like to make sure that whatever I'm saying can be supported in that way.
Right.
Anecdotally, do I see kind of like an upward trend? I've heard police officers talking about the increased numbers of domestic violence cases that they've had to interact with and had to manage and deal with, just a rise because of the fact that people are at home, where typically you would have a break, your child is at school, and now everybody's kind of like in the same home together. That being said, I will also say, kind of going back to what I mentioned before, some of these things have been underlying throughout this whole time, and this pandemic has just kind of highlighted it. So I don't know that it's necessarily the case where somebody was never an abuser before, and all of a sudden, because of the pandemic, they've become an abuser. But maybe there are people who have shown those signs before and had those aggressive behaviors, and now this has just exacerbated it. So I think that that's kind of maybe sort of maybe more so the upward trend that we're seeing. And then also, I can't necessarily, again, speak to, you know, statistics as far as like divorces and all of that. Has it made it harder for families who are already divorced? Absolutely. As far as what I know as well, like when kids are involved and thinking about visitation and wanting to be safe and sheltering in place. And yeah, it definitely has increased the stress on what would already be stressful situations.
A matter of fact, someone just texted me some questions here that they wanted to ask. They wanted to know, I think we talked about this a little bit. They said they wanted to know, what's the early signs of, what are some of the ways a person can identify if they are in distress? What should they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, you know, part of it is just kind of the length of time in which it's been harder to kind of cope. I think when it comes to the difficulty that it takes to kind of face daily life and what you would expect to, what level you'd expect to be functioning at on a regular basis, and how significantly that has changed. Sometimes it can be harder to see in ourselves, but other people around us can kind of notice it and kind of ask, you know, has everything been okay? What's been going on? I think it's never too early. If you feel like you are distressed, if you feel like you're feeling signs of something that you've never felt before, you know, then that can be the sign for you. I don't necessarily want to pick apart, you know, each of the disorders, because I definitely don't want people to kind of go out and say, you know, oh, I must have that or I must have that. So I think, you know, part of it is just being aware, and the first point of contact could be just telling a friend, this is what I've been noticing. I've been experiencing it for the past couple of weeks, and kind of just being able to share in that way, talking to your primary care physician, you know, this is what I've been experiencing. And then, you know, if you feel like it's at a level significant enough, being able to kind of look up a therapist online. There are many different websites. Psychology Today is a great one where you can just kind of look up. You can add different filters for whatever you're looking for, what people specialize in, where they're located, what insurance they take, and then get a great list of people to start with.
Is there any free education information or websites or anything that people could get information? Or is there other ways that if you can't afford services, is there anything out there that people, I know that probably against, you know, different practices, but especially dealing with the stress or anger management or whatever it may be that they're going through, that they can able to, you know, get this information?
Absolutely. I think with how technology is today, there are a wealth of resources that are out there, a wealth of coping strategies that can be used and implemented. One can be going to the American Psychological Association's website. They have a lot of information about different types of disorders and diagnoses. The Child Mind Institute is a great one. As I mentioned earlier, I primarily work with kids and teens. Mm-hmm. I'm more so kind of geared towards that end of things. That's a really great website, which provides a lot of helpful information. There are different types of apps that are out there that people can look into that can provide information. And as you're kind of gathering all of this, don't necessarily feel like you have to be your own therapist. Even if it seems as though I can't afford it, there are services that are available. Find out what, if you do have insurance, call your insurance company and find out who is listed with them that are in network that you can kind of go to. And it's not impossible to explain because of these challenging times what's going on. There are psychologists, there are therapists that are willing to work with you in order to provide the support that's needed.
I have a two-part too with this one. Being that you were saying that you work with children, now how could a parent talk to their children about, you know, what's going on with them? How can they comfort them, especially in this time where they hear so much about COVID-19 and they're hearing so much about the unrest that's going on in our country right now, which I'm leading and gearing towards that now. But how can one, you know, have that conversation dealing with the fear of what's going on? Because I know certain, you know, like my kids don't even want to leave the house at a certain point when they're hearing about this COVID-19 going on. You know, so how can parents speak to their kids towards this, and also in regards to fear of the unrest that's going on in our country right now?
Yeah, those are, you know, as a result of the times that we're going in, there are some heavy conversations that families are now having to have, but they're also important conversations and ones that should be taking place. So I would provide encouragement first in that standpoint, to be encouraged to have those conversations, even if it feels awkward. An awkward conversation is better than silence, right? Mm-hmm. And so in addition to that, I think part of it is just, again, going back to that validation piece and normalizing. These are really tough times. It would make sense that you would be experiencing fear. It would make sense that you would be experiencing some anxiety. It would make sense that you would be feeling some low mood or depressed mood on days. That completely makes sense, and kind of leading with that so it doesn't seem like it's this foreign, icky disease that I don't want to catch, right? And I'm talking about mental health, not necessarily COVID-19. And I'm kind of opening it up that way to the degree that the parent feels comfortable. Sometimes it's also helpful to also be able to share as well. You know, I've been dealing with a lot of stress lately, and it's been hard for me. How has it been for you? Right. So then it kind of helps to take that guard down. There are going to be cases where, you know, your kids are going to want to share. And then there are other cases in which they're not going to want to share. But I think the fact that you have opened the door to that conversation is what's most important. And even if they're not necessarily having those conversations with you, providing opportunities and pathways for them to have conversations with trusted individuals is important.
Very good. Awesome. I like those answers. And as I know, Bibilin wanted to segue into what is happening today. Mm-hmm. And one of those questions, I think, point to it. But in addition to COVID-19, we have the George Floyd situation. which I am sure every person in America is aware of. Mm-hmm. And that is added stress onto what the COVID-19 has been doing to people. What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's tough and it's heavy and it's hard. This is, unfortunately, as many people are very well aware of, something that's not new, but something that has been systemic and going on for so many years. And so I think it's a tough time, right? It's tough in the sense of understanding how widespread the injustice is. It's tough to come to the realization of how many hurting people there are out there. It's tough to understand the grief. It's tough to understand all of the rage and the anger, but that's what we are facing and that's what's going on at this time. And so, you know, there are so many different ways to kind of address it and attack it. And I think the understanding of it all is, it takes time. It takes time for sure. Does this have an impact on our mental health? Absolutely. One thing that I am constantly encouraging other people is to give space to what's going on, and to have moments where you can kind of talk about it freely, and also have those moments where you can just unplug and to recharge. There's a lot that's being drawn from us as we engage in these very important conversations and this important, what I'm hoping will be a movement that brings about change. And because of all the energy that it's taking away from us, sometimes we're left depleted. And so it's so important to be aware and to be engaged, but also at times to just unplug from everything that's going on so that you can kind of recharge.
Okay, so me listening to the news every opportunity that it comes on is not helpful.
Long term, probably not.
Okay, so that's what you mean by unplugging, right?
Absolutely. There are times where we have to turn the news off. There are times where we have to get off social media. Mm-hmm. There are times where we have to not engage in every debate that's going on. Mm-hmm. As a means of recharging, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't get involved and that you can't be supportive. I think in order to be a part of a marathon race instead of a sprint, you recognize that there's an importance in kind of refueling in the best way possible. I personally have had to put some of those measures in as well, just so that I can maintain my own mental health, which means I have had to kind of take breaks from those things, to go for walks, to pray, and to kind of just recharge.
Good, good. You have anything else for her?
Yeah. How can they do that though? Because some people, I know it's, if they feel that if they don't watch the news, they're not being informed, or if they're not on social media, if they're not being informed. But health-wise, it's like you just say, it's good for them to de-stress themselves away from those things. But how can they do that? Like, what's some of the things that they can do instead of listening to the news? Or, you know, what's the things that you recommend for them to do?
Yeah. There's so many different things that people can do. I'm a big advocate for physical activity. And so that means if we're partying, it means if we're going for a walk, if we're doing an exercise video on YouTube, and if really go to the gym right now, you can like go for a run or get a way of getting your body active and moving. It's so important for our mental health, and it's so important to kind of get a way of recharging. In addition to that, some people like to journal. Some people like to, like I said before, listen to music. Some people, for those in the Christian faith, going to have moments of prayer, reading your word. And I understand that that doesn't necessarily provide all the answers that we're looking for in the moment, but it does provide a way of, to me, seeking that peace that we need that isn't going to come from this world. And so I think, you know, even having conversations with people, in some ways it's helpful to kind of cope by just saying, I'm hurting, this is hard, and I'm sad. And that's completely okay too.
All right, well, thank you so much, Dr. Davis, for joining us today on this segment. It's really you pointed out some stuff that I didn't even thought about. People being busy with their everyday lives, and then things have to stop because, now you're seeing that, hey, there might be an issue there that I have to deal with. I didn't even think about that. And you brought up some really good things on de-stressing, where they can pray and they can listen to music, they can dance and get, do exercises. All the things that you mentioned, those are really good, great information that we can take in our everyday lives and implement. And there were easy things that we don't need a textbook or a degree to do, but easy things that we can were able to do. So a really exciting and really happy that you were here to talk to our audience and in everyday things that's easy for them to do. Now, if somebody wants to get in touch with you in helping their children or helping in help for themselves, how would one get in touch with you?
That's a good question. So, just to clarify, I'm in Maryland. I'm licensed to work in Maryland. And so, unfortunately, even via telehealth, I can only see people that are residing in Maryland ethically. That being said, there is a website I mentioned before, Psychology Today, where people can always find different types of therapists and psychologists. I'm listed on there as well. My name is Renee Davis, as was mentioned. So they can find me that way. That's actually probably the best place to find me when it comes to seeking out mental health services. And I think, when we talk about recharging, seeking a therapist is also an absolutely wonderful way to do that.
As we, get ready to end, I just want to go over, Rivelin, the ways in which they can see this podcast and that they can reach out to us.
Sure.
So we are on Facebook, live chat with Viv and Bill. We have an email address, live chat, vivandbill@gmail.com. And we also have a website, live chat with vivandbill.com. And before we will give us our parting words, after we listen to programs and when we do these shows, I really want us to take away, have some takeaways, some things that you're going to start doing. So the first thing that I think I want you as a listener is to start writing down things that, are stressing you out. Sometimes think about it, but put it down on paper, write it down. And so that's your homework. Write down thing that's going on, and that, oh boy, I'm fearful of seeing people in masks. I am fearful of, my child going out there and being seen by the police. Write it down. And then, you go through it. Why am I scared? Why am I fearful? And then, you can even help yourself untangle these. So I want you to try to do that. So that's your homework. As you listen to this, start writing down these things. And as our guest, Dr. Davis said, we need to validate. Don't just roll that. Joe. Don't worry about that. Validate what you are feeling, and validate what your children are feeling. Validate what your spouses are feeling, and then from there. Any last words, Dr. Davis, before we go?
I just want to thank you all again for having me on here. I appreciated the opportunity to put a spotlight on mental health. It's such an important topic and discussion, especially given the times that we're in. So thank you for providing that space, and I hope that the conversation can continue with those that are listening.
Thank you. And once again, the homework that Vilma said was to make sure that you write down what your thoughts are, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and able to visit you know, what your children are feeling, what your husband are feeling, and let them in on that writing assignment. Let them gather their own notebooks and journal, which is very important, and have a family dance night. According to what Dr. Davis said, have a dance time. You know, you could dance, you could walk together as a family. So those are things that we can able to implement in everyday lives, because we don't just want to dream about a good life. We want to live a good life. Thank you for joining us. This is Life Chat with Viv and Phil. Goodbye.
Bye.